Hey, you've hit the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Peter Hostrasser. I am the host of the podcast, and I am so happy that you're here. If you get a chance, hit up disrupteducation.co or peterhostrasser.com. You can read anything and everything around what I'm doing these days and education reform, and you can even catch a glimpse of this podcast right there, and I write a blog as well. I'd love to have you as a guest at peterhostrasser.com. Also, if you get a chance, hit up getahallpass.com. We have an amazing 90 for 90 series going on right now. You can sign up for those. You can check out some different things. You can actually hear college professors talk about the realities of college unplugged. My co-founders, Audrey Boyle and Dr. Peter A. James, and I have very, very invigorating discussions and a lot of programs there at getahallpass.com. On today's podcast, I have Roger Osorio. Roger is the man around reinventing people. His story is too long to introduce here, and he'll give that in a moment. But I will tell you, Roger is an unbelievable human being who has helped over 100,000 people across the world reinvent themselves. He's been in education. He's been in corporate America. He is connecting the coaching, the teaching, and so much more. His story is coming up next on Disrupt Education. Hang out with us. We'll be right back. Have you ever thought about creating courses and training online? Without a partner to guide you through that process, you're going to be stressed about why your learners aren't engaged or how to create updated content, missing revenue opportunities, and not even having enough time. I know because I create online courses, and I have a solution for you, e-learning partners. You don't have to be overwhelmed anymore. Become a partner with eLearning Partners to create your courses and training stress-free and achieve the results you want to see. If you are thinking about wanting to create a course or training online and you believe like I believe that no expertise should go unheard, then click the eLearning Partners link in the notes of this podcast and you can start your journey to create your courses and training stress-free. If you want all that and more from the eLearning Partners, hit the link in the podcast notes because there's a free masterclass for you to take. That's right, a free masterclass. Hit that link today. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to this episode of Disrupt Education. I've got a special guest today, Roger Osorio. I don't even know how to introduce this guy. Oh my gosh, Roger, you've done a lot of things. You've done corporate. You're a professor at UPenn. You've taught math. You're a professional speaker, reinventing people across the world. Tell us a little bit about who you are. First off, thank you for being here, man.
My pleasure. I appreciate you having me. And yeah, you know, it's been a wacky journey, and that's why reinvention is the theme of what I'm focusing on right now, because I've learned so much along my journey, reinventing myself many times, you know, it really started actually commercial refrigeration sales. I was selling commercial refrigeration to convenience stores and those types, and bars and restaurants and nightclubs. And there were some interesting stories that, you know, and experiences there, but I hit a point where I was actually working a small part-time job back in 2007 at a learning center teaching math. And I was just having a blast working with these students. And I discovered something working with them. And it was that they didn't need as much help in math as they did in removing barriers to confidence. And there was something there about that whole experience and figuring that out that just made me fall more in love with this process and working with students. And so I took the leap. And I left that corporate job, you know, and the commercial refrigeration sales. And then from there, decided that I needed to go back to school. You know, while I felt that I had some good initial luck and, you know, a nice start in working with these students, I didn't want to presume that that meant that I'd be awesome forever and that I'd be the greatest in the world at this. but I wanted to be the greatest in the world at this. And so I thought, what do I need to do in order to get better at this? And so I figured out what I needed to study. And it actually wasn't education, it was math. It was really psychology. I wanted to understand how to help people grow in anything, whether it's, you know, small business, large business, entrepreneurship, math, athletics, whatever the situation might be. I wanted to figure out, how do we help people grow? Like, what is that recipe? What's the science behind it? Because I didn't just want to wing it. I mean, that's not scalable, right? You know, it's, you might get a little luck every now and then, but it's just not scalable. And so I went back to school and I got a master's in psychology focused on leadership development and executive coaching. And then from there, once I graduated, I, you know, took me a little bit, but I landed in a consulting role at a school district where I found an incredible superintendent who absolutely just had all this faith in me, and for the right reasons. He goes, I know that you've never consulted in schools. I know that you don't have any credentials for teaching math or teaching for that matter, but I know you've done it. And I know you bring this, all this crazy excitement, and you bring this different perspective that comes from psychology. And so I'm going to give you a shot here, and I'm going to give you a 1-year contract. And what I need you to do is to help turn around two schools that are struggling significantly in math in my district. And so I was just like, wow, it's so awesome to be in front of a leader that's just that blunt, open, honest, and just like, let's just be real about what the situation is. And so, you know, long story short, I got in there and I started working with the faculty. And then somewhere in the first couple of months, they thought, let's get you in the classroom, you know, because you've got some experiments and some big ideas here. And I think the only way to test them is in the classroom. And so we figured out a way to legally get me in the classroom and, you know, make sure we weren't breaking any laws or anything. And it was, and we got in and we were able to run some really cool experiments in a math classroom. From there, after 2 years there, they unfortunately, because of cuts to funding, they couldn't renew my contract. So I ended up as a full-time math teacher, which was kind of the next great experiment for me, because now that I had done all of these different types of tests with, you know, small experiments, short-term, like a couple months at a time, I thought it'd be great if I could figure out how to implement a lot of these ideas, but as a full-time teacher. Because if these are really going to, these ideas that I've come up with are really going to impact education, it's got to work in the classroom. And it has to be something that a teacher could implement in the room with all the responsibilities that teachers have. You know, I mean, because it's not just teaching as like, you know, right. I'm sure we, I mean, I know I wished it was, but I learned that it's not. I learned that it's hallway duty. I learned that it's lunch duty. I learned that it's like all these different things that I had to do in addition to preparing for my class and delivering a great performance in the classroom. And so just going through that experience, I was able to figure out how to apply these to teachers. And I spent 2 years teaching at an all-girl private school, and it was just in a middle school, and it was amazing. So difficult, in obviously, and you know, I'm sure anybody listening who's interacted with this age group, you know, it's so difficult, but also so rewarding and so incredible. And even more rewarding for me, because these are young ladies and I happen to already, going into this experience, have like my own thoughts around like this issue with people being almost like raised to believe that, well, boys do the math stuff and girls do other stuff, you know, like literature, English or whatever. And I was like, I don't buy that. And I never bought that. When I was working at that learning center, that was one of the confidence issues, one of the barriers that I ran into that I had to remove when I worked with, you know, high school girls. And so I thought, well, here I've got a group, not in high school yet. Maybe not all of them have yet been, you know, like poisoned by this terrible thought, this limiting belief. And maybe some have, but it's still early enough that I could do something about this. And so that's, for me, what made it such a rewarding experience. But that was like, you know, my journey into the classroom specifically. And then from there, you know, went to corporate, where I got to spend time with IBM, and they recruited me actually right out of the classroom. And I was there focused on executive coaching, training, and really the mission that the executive who hired me and recruited me gave me was to help drive entrepreneurial mindset in the company. And that's what I was doing even in the schools that I was working with, because I was trying to empower teachers with a mindset and a process, because it's not just a mindset. You got to have the process and the tools for being able to take their ideas from concept to creation. And inside of schools, I think it's like, if you look, if you could do it in a school, you could do it anywhere, because chances are in a school, you're probably not going to get all the support you'd like. You're not going to get the funding, all of those things. Whereas at a company, if I find the right people and I build my network, I can get an executive to, you know, shell out some money to get my idea off the ground at least. But in a school, right, I'm probably going to have to bootstrap my way through that idea. I'm sure, you know, you can relate, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And, you know, so I thought, look, I did this over there. And he's like, please help us do it over here. Because a lot of people will say, oh, my idea, you know, it didn't take off because nobody approved it. And that executive was like, that's just not a good enough answer. Like, that's not a good answer. You know, we can't just say no or back down or quit on things because we didn't get the approval. And so I said, oh gosh, I did this like with, you know, in schools and we had no budget. He's like, teach people how to do that, please. Teach people how to think that way. And then what the process and the tools are in order to drive that kind of activity. And so it was, as weird as it sounds, it was actually a perfect segue, a perfect transition going from working in a school to then moving to IBM. But I was also teaching classes at IBM. So I still had classes, you know, I was teaching classes that I would spin up on leadership, on success strategies, coaching, like, because people wanted to learn executive coaching. And so I taught a lot about that. And it was an awesome experience to be able to do that. And I often, they would often ask me, like, what was it like to teach middle school girls? I go, a lot harder than teaching all of you guys. You all are easy. I mean, sometimes you do act like high school children and middle school kids, and they laugh because they know it's true. They know it's absolutely true. But I go, you all are easy. Working with adults, the easiest thing in the world compared to working with middle school girls. And you know, so if you could teach, you know, high school, middle school, all that, you know, and this is for all teachers out there, I promise you, you can go teach executives, you know, at any company and you'll think, this is it. Oh my gosh, this is so easy. Because let me tell you, no corporate trainers, or very few, have really good classroom management skills. Like, they don't know how to tell them, put your laptop down. I did know how to do it, but I told plenty of middle school girls, close your laptop down. Did the whole stare down. I'm going to wait. Like, I'm not moving from here until that laptop is closed. And we could do this. Like, well, I'll stand here as long as I have. I did the same thing at IBM with IBMers. Because you know what? It's not that they're bad people. You know, they're not bad people or rude or anything. It's just that normally that's just nobody challenges them that way. And I'm like, look, my mission here is to deliver maximum value for you. I do not want to waste your time. I want to give you the most return on this time you're investing here in this class. And I know your time is valuable because you could be in meetings, you could be doing your projects, work, whatever it is, calling on clients or whatever it might be. So I am not going to waste your time, but I will waste your time if you've got that laptop open. So I'm going to wait right here until that laptop gets closed and then we'll start the session. And we would do it. And it was really cool because people would eventually do it. And then, you know what? We all had a great time and it was a great session and, you know, you got the value. So even at IBM, it wasn't that different from working in high schools and middle schools. But the last thing I'll share, which I think you and I are going to connect on for the rest of the conversation, is this other experience that kind of overlapped both teaching at the middle school and working at IBM. And it was Startup Weekend. It's an event that is 3 days long, happens on weekends, of course, Fridays through Sundays. And these events happen all around the world. And it's for aspiring entrepreneurs or experienced entrepreneurs to come in and learn how to take ideas from concept to creation. And so they come in, they go through the process, there's a facilitator, and I was that facilitator. And so I became a facilitator for this awesome, awesome organization. And I was able to facilitate over 50 events around the world for Startup Weekend. In fact, I, you know, just thinking back to like my first international one, I was in Paris, France, and it was amazing. It was summertime, July, I'll never forget, early July. But you know, it doesn't matter where in the world you are, everyone goes through that same journey for getting an idea out of their head and, you know, out onto paper and then turning it into an experiment. How do I launch it? How do I test it? And so this event has been incredible because not only does it allow me to teach all these people and make an impact, but I learned the process, which I brought to the classroom.
Yeah.
And that's what helped me in the classroom. I'm not sure what I would have done in the classroom without this process. If I could have come up with my innovative assessment methods, if I could have come up, which yeah. I'm sure you and I've had a chance to talk about yet, but I'm sure we will. But all these things that I was able to come up with, not sure if I could have done that. And the same thing with, you know, even what I did at IBM. But now IBM is behind me as well. And I'm focused fully on the, or I should say mostly, on the School of Reinvention. And basically the mission that I have is to empower people with the skills, strategies, and the community to define success on their own terms. Not what society has told us we have to do, not the path that someone else is, so, but whatever like we want. And I realized on my journey that I wanted something a little different. I thought I wanted the traditional, like, oh, I want to become a, you know, big corporation executive. And that's what I thought I wanted in college. And for a little while I did, but then I realized, no, that's, I don't know, that doesn't excite me as much. And I could pursue it for the money, or I could just say, maybe this is the time to reinvent myself. And so I want to empower people with those skill strategies and the community, because it does take people, a community of people, to help you along the way so that then you can reinvent yourself to go get that new goal, that success on your terms.
Absolutely. I love your path, and we've had a conversation about it before, and the pivoting and writing. There's so many levels in here at this discussion. You know, as educators, it is very difficult, and it's refreshing to hear, quote unquote, an outsider. I don't want to label you as an outsider, but you were coming into an instance where it's very difficult to do that. Even in a private school setting, public school, it doesn't matter. We're very bold headed people as educators. Man, there's so many levels here. I wanted to like think about, okay, so we are taught so different as educators than if I listened, and I actually did check out, and I'll throw all your credentials up there. But if you look at your classes and you look at the leadership and the reinventing, like that should be taught to educators, honestly. You can kind of see the list, the psychology and understanding the human and those types of things. Those were never part of my education as a teacher, you know, coming into education. I learned those things on my own. What were some of the main topics that you tried to pass along to the educators in the middle schools that you were teaching in?
You know, so for me, it was the skill that I feel made the biggest impact on my teaching. And that actually goes back to when I was learning in my master's in psychology, which was focused on executive coaching and leadership development. The executive coaching piece, when I was going through that program, I needed to practice these skills. Now, most of the students in this program with me were like significantly older. I was 27. I looked 17. And they were in their 40s and 50s. And so they called on just friends who were their age and say, hey, can I practice coaching on you? And I was like, oh, wow. You know, it was hard for me to get anybody to take me seriously, you know, when I look like a kid. And so I just thought, where do I practice? And I was so anxious to practice. I'm like, oh, I want to test all these new strategies and methodologies right away. And so I was working with students privately at that point in time. And I had started my own tutoring company, which then evolved into a coaching company. It was no longer academic tutoring or math tutoring, it was math coaching or academic coaching. And it was the coaching skills that made the biggest impact on how I worked with students. It's where the biggest transformations happen in the shortest amount of time, because coaching taught me how to remove those barriers much more quickly, because that's what it's really focused on. The underlying assumption of coaching is that the solution and the answers and the ability for the person to succeed already resides inside of them. The job of the coach is to help remove the stuff that gets in the way, and so that the client can find their own solution, can create their own solution. We want the client to own the victory. So imagine me approaching students this way in math. I'm not going to hand you the formula. I'm going to walk you into that formula, but you're going to be the one who walks in the door, not me. I'm not even going to open the door. I'm just going to present the door to you and get you to turn that doorknob, walk through, and then realize, wow, that was it. I go, yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Not as exciting as, you know, we all thought, right? The world makes you think math is the scary subject and only the special few with the math genes. It's garbage. There's no such thing as a math gene. None of that is real. It's what people say so that they feel better about their own skills in math, so they can say, I'm so much better because I'm an engineer or whatever, or, you know, mathematician. And that's nice that they are. That all it means is that they pursued that career. That's the only difference. And some people pursue other careers. But at the end of the day, coaching helped me remove those thoughts, barriers, and all of that, so I can unleash what they had inside of them all the time, which was the ability to reason and to use their own like experience and logic to say, well, this kind of doesn't make sense. Tell me more. Why doesn't it make sense to you? Or in what way doesn't it make sense? Those kinds of questions got the students thinking, well, you know, I don't know. I'm probably wrong. Maybe you are. I really don't even care. Go ahead. What do you have on your mind? Let's go. And so you do that. All of a sudden, a student walks into it and realizes, is this it? I go, I don't know. You tell me. Does that make sense? This is what a coach does, by the way. Coaching can be very annoying because we're never going to give you the answer. We're never going to tell you the answer. And a good coach will never tell you the answer. Even if, you know, he or she knows the answer, we shouldn't give you the answer. And so it's because we don't want you to be dependent on us. And in that same way, I approach students. So when I worked with teachers in both the high school and the middle school, the number one thing I wanted to impart was this ability to, or this skill in asking better questions. Because I thought that if nothing else, all right, maybe some of my wacky assessment ideas might be a little harder to like teach and pass along in a short amount of time, that is, you know, because I was even running some of those experiments in the process. But I know that if we all become better at asking questions and we become better at walking students, guiding them to their own formulas, to their own solutions, they are significantly more likely going to remember that than if I give them the answer. And we've all heard this, right? You know, what you tell someone, there's like some really low percent chance they'll remember. What they discover on their own or figure out on their own, they're significantly more likely to remember. So I knew that if I didn't give you the formula that, and you walked into it on your own, you were already, if nothing else, like way better, more likely to remember it. And if you could remember, you might be able to do it again. And if you could do it again, then you might be able to do it on a test. And so I already got you a lot farther in this way. But in the process, there's something really cool that happens. And it's the confidence. It's the, it's like the, hey, this is fun. Like not fun, like in the, I'm going to pursue math for my career fun. Like, and that was okay. I'm like, I really don't care if you pursue math or not. I want you to pursue whatever fires you up, because who am I as someone who's reinvented myself so many times and stopped listening to other people on what success is? Who am I to tell you, no, you should love math and become an engineer or even STEM? I'm like, look, they're like, but Mr. Osorio, STEM, this, that. I go, STEM is cool and all that. And it's a big thing. But honestly, if you're not passionate about it, please don't force it or favor it, or because then you're going to do what the previous generation did with other topics, you know, where everyone told them, oh, you should go into this thing. And then they did it. And then they weren't happy. And then we said STEM, and now it's STEM is the new, whatever the old thing was. And then we're going to do it again with something else. Like, do what you love. But here's what I think. Math should not be the thing that you're ever afraid of. And it should never be the thing that keeps you from doing something that you're passionate about. And if you do it this way, I promise you, you're going to succeed in anything. You're going to be able to solve problems. You've got the ability to reason on your own. You don't need all these books. I'm going to help you figure that out because I want you to solve problems. Right. And so that was the number one thing. If I could help teachers extract that from students, remove the barriers, extract the greatness that's already in them, then get the heck out of their way after you do that. Because the only thing we could do at that point is honestly slow them down. At that point, learn. We are all wired to learn. We're wired to learn. We don't need anybody to like really take us much. It's remove the barriers, provide the path, a nice, clear, you know, good environment, tools, and then get the heck out of the way.
It's so interesting. I what I'm hearing you say is when you ask the right questions, right? And you start to build those confidence, then you identify barriers with them. And then, you know, I do this all the time in the classroom as well. And it works wonders. It's like, you know, I think a lot of educators, we're taught in classroom management. We're like, no, stop that, quiet this and that, you know, and honestly, that's, you know, I was educated for becoming an educator 20 years ago, and it's very similar. But what you just said there is so key. It's digging it back into, well, why, what looks different from this. It's, I can't do this because, okay, let's look into that statement. Mm-hmm. That's a barrier. And then you identify and build those confidence. I love that. And now shifting even into the world of corporate America, and how this all, it does work the way that you see it. I just love the fact that, you know, they're like, what are you doing with these kids? And then you do the same thing. What I took from your story about IBMers and you know, let's put our laptops down. I don't want to waste your time. Mm-hmm. I've known more and more teachers that are succeeding saying that to their students as well. Like, I don't want to be here wasting your time either. I know you want to be home or asleep or eating something else. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, how did the, what were more of the things that at the corporate level that are working that kind of blew your mind? Because it, you got to be thinking, oh my gosh, wait, I'm doing this. And then, you know, through that path. But those are the things that also, you know, we can use with students. You know, maybe one or two key things, you know, going a little bit further into what you've used in boardrooms with professionals. What were some of those things that, you know, I've used this with kids, teens, or preteens, and it actually works as well with what are some of the things that we can kind of tell teachers that?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the big things, and this one I applied in both settings, and I'm actually not even sure where I got it first. Was I teaching adults or not? But bottom line is it works in both settings. And it was to very clearly define the outcome. What is the outcome of this time that we're spending together? What do I want to get you to at the end of the day? Because we're constantly making decisions. You know, we're always deciding. And we're deciding, you know, we're looking at what is, what's out, what our options are, and then we make a decision on where we want to put our attention. And our attention is going to go to the best sales pitch. And unfortunately, sometimes the better sales pitch is social media. Sometimes it's YouTube. Sometimes it's Netflix. You know, and it is what it is, right? Sometimes it's email. And so in the corporate setting, and so or social media there too. And so it's all about, I got to sell you. I got to constantly be selling you. And this is actually an idea that actually first formed when I was working with students. Because when I was in the high school consulting, it was an alternative high school. And so we had students that were just slightly a little bit older, had, you know, for whatever reason, were off the normal path, you know, and they had dropped out or been expelled or whatever. And now they were back. And I felt that, you know what, I got to give you a compelling reason to be here. I got to give you a compelling reason to learn math. Because otherwise, why would you? Shoot, why would I? if nobody gave me a good reason, I'd rather not do it. And so that's where I started thinking about outcomes. But that applied incredibly well in the corporate setting. Because when I would write my descriptions or my titles, the title would be how to blah, 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 right? You know, and then that would give them like, oh my gosh, I want to know how to do that. So now they're coming in thinking there's a very specific outcome that I'm aligned with. And I would do that because I also wanted the right person in the room. That's in the corporate setting. Obviously, in high school, they have to come. You know, it's right. You know, and that's the only downside. So it just means we have to work harder. We got to make sure that it's compelling. So I'll give you an example. In high school, I remember when I was in the high school, I was working with students that were struggling in geometry, and they were also causing a lot of problems in the classroom. And so the experiment I ran was I went to the teachers that had some of these students that were really struggling and also causing a lot of disruption in the classroom. And I asked them, I said, who in the room, if you could make three students go away for two of your sessions every week, who are the three students that you would snap your finger and send them to another room? And so they gave me their three students. I go, I'm going to take those three students twice a week. Because I know that the only thing standing in their way from participating effectively in your classroom, successfully in your classroom, is that they're behind. They're behind. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to connect or even care about whatever the heck you're selling right now. So I'm going to start working with them ahead of, like, behind the scenes. So I'm going to take them away, which is not really hurting them because, let's face it, them being here, they're not picking up any of this anyway. So let me give them something of value, something that's going to make them feel better, because right now they feel pretty crappy in your room and they're going to pay that back by helping you feel crappy too. So, you know, and that's, I get that. I totally understand where they're coming from. I think adults would do the same thing. And so, you know, we're not better in this way. Like, we're going to do the same exact thing if there's this conflict going on. And so the same, you know, so we pulled them out, and my mission was to start working with them and all of that. Now I've got them all in a room from three different classes all at the same time. So it ended up being, I think, about 6 to 9. I really don't remember, but because I think I got three different classes, three students in each, and I made a little group of 9 of the toughest students. And then I had to sell them on geometry. I had to sell them on this thing because I knew, look, I got them here, but now I got to deliver. And if I don't get their attention, this is not going to work. This is not going to work at all. And so I said, what I'm going to offer you is a way to learn how to win any argument you ever get into with mom, dad, friends, teachers, adults, police, authority. I don't care who it is. I'm going to show you how to argue. Argue better than anybody. Argue so that it is airtight, watertight, and there's no way someone can break your arguments. And the way I taught it was through geometric proofs. I started teaching them how to do proofs. It wasn't even part of the curriculum where they were yet, but I knew that it was going to be the hook. I needed a hook. Yeah. I needed something to get them in with. And so we started doing proofs, not in the textbook, not that textbooks are bad, because I actually like textbooks a lot. So I have to state that I'm a big fan of textbooks. The old ones too. Like I love the old ones.
Yeah.
They're thinner. There's less cartoons in them. So they're a lot thinner. But that's just like my own thing. But I was like, I have to like real world. Like I'm going to throw something up on the board. We're going to talk proofs. We're going to talk it out. Later, I'll show them how to organize those thoughts. But for now, we got to like talk it out. And so, you know, maybe we put up a couple of triangles. We were trying to prove that they were, you know, symmetrical or whatever it might be. Like I had a, you know, we were congruent or whatever. So I would walk them through it through a conversation. And we would do this. And little by little, let me tell you, did not start off in a very nice way. Like, like I remember I had to challenge like the toughest one in the room, like face to face. Like I'm like, hey, get up now and do it. He's like, and you know, he's like, oh no, I don't do that. I don't write on, I don't do work on the board. And I was like, well, that's interesting because I'm not asking you, I'm telling you to go do that work on the board. And so, and he was like totally slouched in his chair that first session. Like, I don't care. I'm just here because you pulled me out of class. So I get some vacay time and all of this. Yep. And finally got him to go up to the board. But I realized that there was actually a reason why he didn't like writing on the board. And it was because he was so tall and most of the stuff on the board was below him. And so it was uncomfortable. And so it was just harder for him to engage. So I thought, I saw this struggle and it was still a fight because he didn't really want to do it. But I did that. And I was like, all right, that's interesting. Let me see. And I'm not saying that was the only thing holding him back, but it was one of them.
Sure.
But then I noticed that if I wrote it a little higher, which means I had to get on a chair before class and write problems on the top of the board, which is cool because then I could have two students at the same time, a short one and him. And he wrote above them and they wrote like below him and it worked out perfect and it was really cool. But then he also wanted more challenge. He wanted it to be more spiced up. And this is where the coaching came in because we ended up having to bring the level down a little bit. I had to meet him where he was, which is a coaching principle, mm-hmm. by the way. And so we had to bring that down. But again, I don't want to go too much into that because I could do that for like an hour or two, but the idea was I had a hook and the hook was that there was an outcome and the same. So at IBM, I had to have really engaging, exciting outcomes. And then I would draw in the people and they would be committed, fully like engaged and into it. And I realized, wow, we could take a lot of workshops at IBM that right now suck. And they don't suck because they suck as the workshop. They suck because they're marketed incorrectly. That there's not, it's like, you know, they say digital marketing 101. No, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to do that. But, you know, like how to brand yourself online and get better job offers or get a better promotion. Oh man, like I'm in, sign me up. And then you teach the same content. You know, like the title, the outcome is what we're all after. And so I think that that applies in both settings. And I think we have a massive responsibility to do that for students as well. You know, like I said, it's not even done in corporate, but you know who we do it for? Customers. Yeah. When it comes to customers, we'll do everything possible to make sure that we sell you effectively. I'm just saying, let's take some of those selling principles and, you know, honor our students and let's say, how can I position this so that you can see the value in what we're doing here? And and the moment you do see that value, then let's rock and roll.
Coming up after the break, Roger and I talk a little bit deeper about all the lessons he's learned teaching and how he takes the coaching and the reinvention methods into teaching more teachers and coaching, the real coaching of education. We'll be right back after these messages. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there. And share with other people. And that's, you know, that's really powerful. And to that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future, and excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to SpikeView.com. Start your portfolio now for free.
It's interesting because I'm a business educator in high school, and I do call my students clients, and they look at me kind of funny. I'm like, no, man, I'm working for you. Like, I'm trying to build. And it's very difficult to do that in a subject like math or the quote unquote core subjects. I'm lucky enough, and maybe I cheated a little bit as an educator, to come in on a core course. My father was a math educator for, you know, 30 some years. So obviously told me how he would implement some of these things that you're saying is, you know, try to get the kid is, all right, look, you're really not going to use this as an engineer. We know you don't want to become an engineer. So then they would work. But also I heard the how to, and then it still goes back to, there's a lot of empathy I can hear in your story of understanding what are the blockers for each student. What I see, and tell me what your thoughts are on this, and we'll round this the conversation out on this, and we'll get to the, you know, you want to share your professional stuff and where people can find you. But in this pandemic that we're in, and how education has just been thrown like all over the place, everybody's like, I feel like we're in the garbage pin of Star Wars, and we're all just getting crunched, and we're waiting for somebody to just turn this thing off. But I actually like it in this area right now, because it does allow us to experiment and work around. And we actually see not only the bads, which we're figuring out, but goods and those things. So with that being said, we're so compartmentalized in schools, in traditional schools, right? Is it possible to take, or what are your thoughts on, to take the coach is the teacher, right? We're really coaches. But a lot of us don't know how to coach, or we haven't been taught to coach, but we are coaches. We're mentors. We're the content is out there once you remove the blockers, right? Like, the content is, and we have to figure out how to get people focus management and how to get them beyond their blockers and all these different things. What do you see school like? Do you see it changing into something like this? Would you like to see it like that? I mean, I know that's a huge question, but chew on that a little bit. Let us know what Roger thinks on that.
Yeah, you know, I love that question, because that's what originally got me into this. You know, I'll never forget. It was when it was back in 2008. I was sitting down with my wife at the time, and, you know, she was asking me about, like, okay, so you just took this major leap. You left your corporate job. You know, what the heck are you going to do? Do you want to become a teacher and all that? I'm like, you know, I don't necessarily want to become a teacher of like one particular subject, because I think I want to teach a lot of different subjects. I want to help people grow. And then that's where it hit me. Like, I really want to learn how to help people grow. And I think that, and then I told her at that point in time, and she's like, so how would you apply this, like, in a, like, to schools? How would you bring that value back? And I'm like, I think it'd be awesome to be able to teach the teachers, you know? And then she was like, what would you teach them? And I'm like, that's what I don't know yet. I don't know yet what I would teach them, but I want to go figure that out. I want to go learn and figure out what it is, because I've had some luck, but I don't even know why. I don't know what it is that I was doing right. I think I just had some really good experiences leading up to that point that allowed me to have some nice beginner's luck. And that's all I will ever call it, is beginner's luck. And that's when I learned, and as I started to learn coaching, I realized that's what I want to bring to schools. That's what I believe will change everything. I think you're spot on. I think that there are things that teachers aren't being taught. And I don't even want to say that the things that they are being taught are the wrong ones, because honestly, classroom management was one of the things I had to learn. And I learned it from working with teachers who knew this, and they already knew how to do this, and they were so good at this. And I borrowed some of those strategies, by the way, and used them elsewhere, because they work with adults. They work when I'm on a large stage talking to thousands of people. I was able to borrow some of those classroom management skills. And I mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes I had to get the adults in line at IBM. And so, or anywhere, wherever I was teaching at the moment. And so it definitely comes into play, you know, and so all of that. But I think that learning those coaching skills would make the biggest difference. I think that teachers learning these coaches, I'm not even sure I want to say teachers as coaches, because I'm not even sure that that's really what the job would be. I don't think a pure coach is what a student needs, because a pure coach would never give you the answer. Look, at some point, we got to share some basics and foundations with the students, the building blocks, if you will. And then we leverage a few coaching skills to help you arrange the building blocks into the more complex idea or concept. And then you own that one. And as you own more and more of those, you're building real estate. So yeah, I gave you a few of those first like little pieces to get started, but I really want you to build your empire, you know, on those foundations, on those foundational pieces. When I worked with middle school students, I was fortunate that they went through, you know, all the grades before that. So they had building blocks. I used those building blocks and maybe gave them just a few others. And then as I got higher up, and, you know, when I was teaching, well, I taught high school first, but still when I taught high school, I didn't need to give them as many of the building blocks, because they already had. Actually, at that level, you're really just rearranging the existing building blocks. But every now and then, some were missing. And coaches know how to meet the student where they are, or meet the client, I should say, where they are. And I applied that to students, and then figure out, okay, what is the real issue here? What's the gap that needs to be filled so that I can then bring you back up to where we are? And the quick story on that that helped me see that so clearly was when I worked one-on-one with students. They would come in, let's say it was an Algebra 2 student, and they're like, I've got Mr. Osorio, or well, it was tutoring, they just say, Roger, I don't understand this thing, like how to do this. I got to do these questions and I have no idea how to do this. So I'm like, all right, well, tell me, like, you know, what would you do first? I really don't know how to do it. I'm like, do something. Like, just write something on paper. Let me just see what you do. And so I started watching the way they wrote and where they, and so they would start something, but I would look for where the hesitations were. And when I see hesitations, I go, okay. I could see where the issue is here. And it was like on fractions, let's say. And then I go, well, fractions is not an Algebra 2 topic. That's like a, you know, middle school topic. Maybe even, I don't remember exactly where we teach it, but it probably even lower. I think sixth grade, fifth grade, or it depends on the school, of course, in the state. But, you know, it's way back there. It's not Algebra 2. And I realized there's issues with fractions. There's issues with finding common denominators in this concept and idea. And of course, at the Algebra 2 level, it looks way scarier, because now there's variables, there's functions on top, and it's like way more complicated. It's not like 3/5 plus, you know, 7/9 or something. It's not that. It is way different. It's like, you know, 2x squared minus 5x plus 4 over x minus 2 plus, you know, and it's like, what the heck is going on? And so
there's letters involved.
Yeah, it got really weird. Well, it didn't look like that in sixth grade. And I'm like, but they didn't even get the sixth grade one. And so we went back there. We covered so as a coach, what we do is we go back one notch. It's like we turn the dial back one notch and we see what happens. That didn't do it. Another notch. No, still not there. Another notch. Another notch. Another notch. Before you know it, each notch is like a grade level. I'm going down. And then finally, I'm like, we're at seventh grade. Boom. So we now address the seventh grade issue, plug the gap. And once we plug the gap, then I simply take them from that gap. I go, now let's go back. Let's go back to the problem and let's see what you do. And most of the time, that was it. They solved the problem. Right there. So that's a coaching skill, strategy, method. If teachers were equipped and armed with this, with these skills, oh my goodness, right, you could troubleshoot way more quickly. Because the other way is like, everyone's behind, what the heck? We're gonna have to have a million review sessions. And here's the problem. All those review sessions, you're not going back far enough. It could actually be way simpler. You're just going back maybe a few modules or a few lectures, a few sessions, maybe to Algebra 1. Chances are it's not even in Algebra 1. It's probably a little more deeply rooted. And if you can find it, it's a lot faster to fix. And then boom, come right back up. Don't even work the whole way up. Literally just fix it, find the gap, plug it, and then go up back up to the top just to see if that does it. And if it doesn't, go back, you know, maybe now you won't go back as far, then take them back up. But you're just playing that game until you get them there. And sometimes it's entire classes. When I taught at the class level, I realized, oh, there's a gap here. At this class has a gap for the most part. Maybe like 80% of the class has the same gap. That's cool. It's fair. Good. Makes it a lot easier. I'm not solving like, you know, 20 different gaps, you know, that are all different places. And because they all took the same courses, so we can address this. This is fixable. It's actually way better now, and versus doing it, you know, one-on-one. So I think this skill is the game changer. I think this is what would transform schools. And I would argue nothing else. And by the way, same skills apply to the leaders of schools, not just the teachers, the leaders of the schools. And the leaders will become more effective as leaders because they will have the coaching skill. And just to give one last insight here, what is IBM doing right now? IBM is on a mission to teach everyone the in the company, the foundations of coaching. And I was part of that effort. I was teaching. I taught thousands of IBMers all around the world coaching, but IBM has like 350,000 people. So I didn't really, you know, get all the way over there, but we were making that impact and we were moving that. And I wasn't the only teacher. There were other teachers too that were teaching coaching because we realized, look, it's not about you becoming a full-time coach. It's about you having these powerful, powerful tools and skills to apply to your area. And I believe school leaders and school teachers, everyone in between would benefit from these powerful skills. And if you had them, if we can share them and get them into the schools, we don't need new technology. We don't need all those other things. We don't need a bunch of cool, fancy things or anything like that. The humans are ready to rock and roll. They're going to make the changes. Yeah. It's going to come from the teachers and the students, by the way, because they're going to respond differently.
That's such a great concept because as an administrator, which I was for a while in education, you know, you would run up against teachers who had some challenges and, you know, they were burning out and they're blockers and you go back. It's the same thing, Roger. I love that because you go back and, you know, I found out some, you know, there was a confrontation somewhere between, you know, a leader and an educator. And that was when the educator started to shut down, right? Like you go back to these, and that's the fraction you're talking about. And it works. It really does. I remember that the teacher, when we got back to that point, I was like, okay, so how do we move forward beyond that? How do we, you know, and we started working, you know, it's a little bit different with adults, but you're spot on. And I love the fact that you do that. You're reinventing people now. You have some great coursework. Where can people find you and how can they connect with you, Roger?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm at the beginning of the journey with the School of Reinvention, and it's something that has been inside of me for a very long time. And you know what, just like everything I've said, I needed a few barriers removed, you know, and I needed to remove a few barriers to get there. And earlier this year, you know, in the summertime, I was actually laid off by IBM. It was part of a massive layoff in North America. And unfortunately, the kind of role I had was seen as, you know, redundant and extra, at least in tough times, you know, I think, which is unfortunate because it's actually what a lot of people believe is what we need in the tough times, because it'll help everybody become more resilient. But you know what? It was a blessing. At the end of the day, it was the biggest blessing because along the way, there were a lot of people being laid off who did not have the same background that I did. They had not reinvented themselves many times. In fact, they had only worked at IBM. And so they were lifelong IBMers, 20, 30. I even met somebody 42 years at IBM. I'm 40. I thought I was done meeting people who had spent an entire career longer than my life. But I found one. And these were the folks, unfortunately, the majority of the folks laid off. And so somebody inside the company who was one of the leaders in the coaching world and was really sad to see me go said, I'm sad to see you go, but I'm not worried about you because I know you're going to figure it out and you'll probably do even bigger and better things right away. But here's the thing, I'm a little concerned about some of our fellow IBMers who this is the only job they've ever had. They've never reinvented themselves. And so she challenged me with something. She said, Roger, I want you to serve them. I want you to spend your last 30 days at the company serving them. Find a way to add value. Teach them the skills. Teach them everything you can so that when they get out there, they're not going to be down. They're not going to be out. You're going to help them get back up. And once she gave me that, I realized this is what I want to do. Yeah, this would be the greatest legacy, the greatest impact to make on the way out. And that gave birth to the School of Reinvention. And so I'm so thankful for, you know, for this mentor, Jennifer, who shared that message with me and actually, you know, gave me that mission and said, go solve this problem right now. And in the process, these people who, you know, who believed in me and placed their trust in me. And then I launched this company and we started off with a mastermind. And now I'm getting ready to launch my first digital class called the Keys to Time Management. And I'm so excited about this because it's one of the workshops that I've been teaching at IBM, University of Pennsylvania, Sarah Lawrence College, and I'm now booked for a few other places to teach it. But I've turned it into a digital course that anybody can buy. It's going to launch in a week. And so I'm really excited to put it out there for the world. Google already bought it, actually, which is kind of cool. Nice. So I delivered theirs earlier this week. And so next week I launched the B2C version. And you can find that on theschoolofreinvention.com, theschoolofreinvention.com. And it's really where you can connect with me, but there's definitely more coming. And of course, you know, you can look me up on my website, rogerosorio.com, and you can sign up to stay updated as new things come out. But stay tuned, there's gonna be more. It's not just about these digital courses, because like we talked about, there's more than just content. We've gotta remove some barriers for people, and we've gotta help people troubleshoot and figure out where they are. And so I'm gonna do that through mastermind offerings, accelerators. And so I will create those for 2021 to help people on a journey, because look, I'm gonna empower you with these skills to help you get hyper-focused and figure out with ultimate clarity what it is that you want and go after it so you can get success on your terms. But I know that that's not enough. You're gonna need help, just like I needed it. I needed to be surrounded by people, and that's the community part. We can help each other as part of masterminds, part of accelerator groups. You know, we're a cohort, we're in it together. We go for a whole year and we get to the end. Because I mean, maybe you've experienced this. I know I did many times. I set a goal at the beginning of the year, or a resolution as they're more often called. And then I check in on it at the end of the year only to find, well, that one didn't work out. Yeah, obviously it's freaking December 31st and there's no chance of recovering that one. We need to check in regularly. You know, we need to be, because it's okay. We'll miss a few months and that's okay. But if it's April or June or July, you still got a chance. But if it's December 31st, that year is done. And you're going to look back and say, gosh, like I had all these thoughts and ideas and I didn't do them. And so I think the community part is important. That's why I said my mission is not just to empower people with skills, but skills, strategies, and community. Working together, we hold each other accountable. We fire each other up more, even more than accountability. And then we get moving.
Sounds like a great squad I want to be a part of. I love it. Roger, thank you so much for hanging out with us on Disrupt Education today, man.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun, and you even helped me work out some ideas too.
Thank you all for listening. We'll check back in with you next time on Disrupt Education.